You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
And good morning, everybody. Now, I want to get right into something, an email that I got it a couple weeks ago. I talk a bit about the 14th Amendment, and I have for some time. And I've got this email which just, it somewhat confuses me just a little bit. I wanted everyone else to hear this. I normally don't let everybody in the world know when I'm confused, but this is really quite titillating. It says, Bill, the 14th Amendment is an executive order, proclamation, volume one of the presidential orders, two volumes, and is private law. And the Social Security Trust is a charitable trust which binds the people with their signature, making them subject to the rules, regulations, codes of the trust under the 14th Amendment and HJR 192. I'm already lost. The people who have walked away from the proclamations of the Constitution, which is corporate, this is a contract between the people and their government and is not the enemy, in capital letters. The people can revoke their gift in trust and debt acknowledgement to the Social Security Trust and reclaim the protection of the Constitution. Did you know the IRS was created in the Social Security Act, Title 8? Removing yourself from the voluntary trust removes a person from the obligation of paying IRS tax. Don't believe it? See truthinlaw.net for the citations, documentations, and links. See, Second Amendment restored, these private international unincorporated associations would be thrown into a panic if even 3% of the population would simply revoke their gift and trust to Social Security. This is the ignorance that is binding the people. Okay, so you can see how my head is spinning with so many things all in one. I am not really sure what the heck to make out of all of this, but I'm going to try. If anybody out there happens to have any insight into this, please call. The call-in number here is 800-313-9443. I would love to hear what you have to say about this. Everything I've read and done my research of is in rather stark contrast to this, but I'm not going to shut it out. I like to learn. Now, that the 14th Amendment is an executive order, it's an amendment. How could it be both? Could it have been an executive order and then turned into an amendment? I have to tell you something, though. I do know this. Historically speaking, back in this era, President Lincoln is a lot of people's favorite president because what you learned about him in school well over 100 years later. Well, some of you out there, well over 75 years later. History of President Abraham Lincoln is not very accurate. And I'll tell you some of the things. First of all, he was the first Republican to ever hold the office of president, Republican Party. Yet he did the following things. He suppressed the South's constitutional right to secede from the Union. So that was actually the second American Revolution. We call it the Civil War. We also have the guy that created the IRS to pay off war debts. And a couple of other things that President Lincoln did back in his presidency, which were none too Republican in nature. They were really pretty shoddy in my book. Not a huge fan of Abraham Lincoln or his presidency. He did certainly do some good things. Folks would have you believe that the Civil War was a war of racism fought over slavery. Not true. Slavery was such an insignificant portion of American history at the time that it didn't even really register on the complaint scale of the South. So, please, do not allow historians to try and fool you. Stay tuned, folks. We got more to come. If you have any insight on this email that I got that just baffles me, please give me a shout, let me know. We'll be back right after the break. This is Bill Carnes live right here on 2A Radio.
It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, everybody, I have to say good morning to everyone. It was certainly a good evening for me and a good day, and today will be yet another good day. I am taking the Handgun Combat Masters course with Chuck Taylor coming up in early October, and a private class with just, there's probably going to be about a dozen of us in there, and we do this once or twice a year with Chuck. It is kind of interesting, however, we travel to, of all states, California to do this. There's a few who attend, who live in California. Chuck lives in northern Arizona. A lot of us live in southern Nevada. Why we all go to California, I'm not exactly sure, but that is where we're going. That just happens to be the traditional spot. And I am hoping to get through this test. I've actually been working at the master's level for about five years now, shooting at the master level. And maybe 6 years. I guess it's actually been six since early 2005, almost nearly 6 years. The Handgun Combat Master is a test that's been in existence since 1981 that Chuck Taylor himself developed with several of his, disciples of sorts, his high-end instructor levels. Because at the time, different writers and people throughout the country were referring to themselves as a master of the handgun or a handgun master. So Chuck decided, well, let's sit down with somewhat of a committee of people who really have a good idea of what's going on, and let's construct some form of a test. So they did. And the next day they went out and shot it, and Chuck passed it first time through. As far as I can tell, the only man in history to actually shoot the test first time through. I've actually shot the test officially four score, probably about 35 times. And it is difficult. It's a 200-round test. And, it's an 80-round test. It is a 400-point test because each shot is worth 5 points. And you have to score at least 90% or better, which means you can only be down 40 points or less between 0 and 40 points and pass and become a certified Handgun Combat Master. Now, I used to run the Handgun Combat Master Prep program at Front Sight for years, and under my time in tutelage, we passed four Handgun Combat Masters at Front Sight. Now, Chuck Taylor, who developed the test, originally said, if you are a certified master, you can also certify other masters. Now, I was not a master certifying. I was running the class, teaching the techniques, and running the test. We actually had a master there when we would actually run the tests. That it would be all official if we had people in the hunt, people who were really in the running. So that's really the way it went, and it was a lot of fun getting to that level of teaching. In fact, there was a couple of different things that would stump me for a spell. How do I really work on getting people to shoot multiples faster? And that was a bit of a brain tease, so I got that done. How do I teach this, what's called the ambi drill? How do I do that? That's where with both hands at 7 yards, you shoot one round to each of three targets. There's only three rounds on the gun, one in the chamber, two in the magazine. We're talking semi-auto handguns. You shoot to emergency reload. You have to fix the emergency reload, transition to your support hand only, and re-engage those three targets one more time. At 7 yards, six rounds, six hits with emergency reload in between. Again, both hands on the gun, the first three shots, your support hand only. Some people call it your weak hand. Go to your support hand only for the last three shots in 6 seconds. So there's just an example of it. How to teach that efficiently. I figured out how to teach that quite efficiently. And then the distance shooting. We would shoot at 50 yards as the maximum. So that's really, that was my last crux. And then I figured out how to teach people to shoot quite effectively with a short period of time at distance. Those are really the three hindrances, and within a few months, I got all of that worked out, and we started passing masters who had been in the hunt for some time. As a matter of fact, two of the guys that came through and became masters under my tutelage were guys that started. They learned from me, and essentially every class that they ever took was through a class that I taught, and within a year and a half or 2 years, which is a very short period of time for this master's piece, they passed, which was great. It was really good. So I really enjoyed that. That was quite a bit of fun teaching. But now I'm in the process of getting ready to take this thing again. I'd like to get it under my belt. We'll see. We're going to be doing that in October. Anyhow, all of this is leading me to, after the show today, I'm going to my buddy Dave Patton's house. Now, Dave sat in for me as the substitute host back in March and April, during the time where I was on set with Pilgrim Films and Television and the History Channel filming Top Shot, which was a mystery to everybody at the time. I couldn't announce it until the announcement came out in late May of the actual show itself. But Dave and I are both going to be taking this course together again, and we'll be going over there and dry practicing. We do have a call from Studio A, Mike in Kentucky on line one. Mike, welcome to Two-Way Radio.
The 14th Amendment there, and one thing that I've kind of been on a little bit of a quest for, and keeping an eye out for, is for a copy of the history book that I had in like the 7th and 8th grade. It only had the first paragraph, which had to do with U.S. citizenship, and I don't remember the other paragraphs there. It's like three or four sections of the 14th Amendment, and one of the things in there that kind of blew my mind about 20 years ago when I ran across it again was the thing that the national debt cannot be questioned when it's
it's pretty funny what they do when we're not paying attention. In fact, Mike, there's actually five sections.
Okay, five sections, yeah.
And it's really a piece of garbage. What you're talking about is Section 4, where it says, the validity of the public debt of the United States, authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pension and boundaries for services in suppressing insurrections or rebellion, shall not be questioned. But neither the United States nor any state shall assume or pay any debt or obligation incurred in aid of insurrection or rebellion against the United States, or claim for the loss of emancipation of any slave, but all such debts, obligations, and claims shall be held illegal and void. So what it is, it's a big runaround. They're going to do what they want to do by the federal government.
Well, and there is a concept in law that says that a country does not have to pay back the debts if its leaders incur those debts under fraudulent circumstances.
You're absolutely right.
Lincoln, I can't remember what the name of that is. It's a concept in law that has its own name, you know, like Gresham's Law, but that's not what it is.
Well, it's very similar to if somebody steals your credit card and rings the thing up, are you liable for the debt or will the credit card company cover it?
Yeah.
It's similar to that.
Yeah. And I don't know how many times that's ever been successfully invoked, but I would say there's probably quite a lot of the U.S. federal debt that could be put into that category, especially the stuff that the Federal Reserve is borrowed into circulation to do whatever they're doing, which we can't even, we're not allowed to know what they're doing.
In fact, Mike, it was created into circulation. Now, let me ask you this. You got the Federal Reserve Bank, which has federal ties, but in fact, it's a private corporation. Yeah. What happens when the federal government tells what is effectively the National Bank, the Federal Reserve, and says, you know something? We're going to waive everything that we don't owe you anymore. What happens then to the Federal Reserve?
Well, if they can't order any more currency to be printed or create any more credit, I think they're out of business, because that's what we've got is two competing money systems. One is credit, and one is monetized debt and then money. Now, money is backed up by something.
You're right. It's backed up by something that we used to have called the gold standard.
Right.
that we were taken off of completely by Nixon in 1971, and we weren't really paying much attention to it for about 40 or 50 years prior to that. I got to tell you, if we told the Federal Reserve just to go pound sand, if you will, I'm thinking that they're not going to loan any more money. They very well will probably fold up shop. We will have to start printing and coining our own money as we once did before. And people are probably not going to get credit, and the federal government will not be able to overextend itself. Now, I'm not a financier by any means. I'm not an economist. But something tells me that all of that will work out in the end, very similar to if someone files for bankruptcy. Things really stink for a little while, and then it works out in the end.
Well, we're not, you know, a lot of people can't borrow money as it is, as the way things are. The banks are not loaning in money in circulation.
Absolutely right.
They
are cash rich and lending poor. They're not giving out anything.
A lot of the bailout stuff just left the country. It went to the whoever, Chase, Manhattan, Bank of America, and Lehman Brothers and all that, and that got funneled over to their bosses in Europe and Israel.
You're right. So, Mike, we're coming up on the break, man.
Okay,
do you want to hold on through the next segment, or are you good?
The point I was going to make about the 14th Amendment and the Civil War in general is that is what I'm going to make after the break, I guess.
Okay. All right, Mike, stay on the line. We'll be right back. Guys, thanks very much. Stay tuned. We've got more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back from the break, everybody. We have Mike from Kentucky back on line one talking about the 14th Amendment. Mike, the floor is yours.
Well, there's a thing that Congress does that kind of gives them plausible deniability called a voice vote. And they can hold a quorum, whatever according to the current rules are, that they decide to call a quorum. And in 1913, most of Congress got on the trains for Christmas vacation, and then the guys that were kind of in a conspiracy that had met on Jekyll Island with the bankers and planned this for 4 years.
Yeah, you're talking about the creation of the Federal Reserve.
The creation
absolutely.
Of the Federal Reserve. They had a voice vote, and after they called a quorum, when the recess for Christmas was already underway, most of the Congress had decided that nothing else was going to happen before they closed the session, so they left. And so, you know, the ones that were there, which was basically a handful, voted the Federal Reserve Act in, and nobody undid it in 1913. Well, my point is, you were going back to the Civil War and the 14th Amendment. When the seven states walked out, the congressmen and senators walked out, Jeff Davis and crew, the newspapers declared the Union is dissolved. Well, it wasn't dissolved. They still could have called a quorum and voted all kinds of stuff. You know, they could have continued. And the argument, you know, has been made that the Union, you know, had to be reassembled, and we had this whole thing we're taught in history called Reconstruction.
Yes.
And then, you know, whatever happened to the original 13th Amendment, that's, you know, been swept under the rug, and then we get this new 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, which there's books written about it where the account is given that Johnson, I think it was, that took over after Lincoln, right, it was... He got impeached, but he had basically told the Congress that, look, this is going to be voted in. If we have to, we'll march in soldiers, and it'll be voted in by voice vote. So you could argue that the 14th Amendment was passed under duress.
Without a doubt, absolutely without a doubt. Go ahead, Mike.
I'm sorry. A lot of people argue that the slaughterhouse cases in 1870s. Undid the 14th Amendment's power, But all it was talking about was the state's ability to hold elections, and it had to do with the U.S. citizenship portion of the first section. It still didn't get into any of the debt or the other portions of the 14th Amendment. So the 14th Amendment is still got a lot of effect to this day, from what I've gathered.
Well, now realize the Slaughterhouse case was just overturned in McDonald v. Chicago. You know that.
Well, yeah, I'd read that, but that's, people still pass that around, that the Slaughterhouse cases undid the power of the 14th Amendment, and that's because all they're taught in school is about the first section to do with U.S. citizenship.
Right, you know? And what it undid when it came to power was it undid any power when it came to actual rights, when it came to people. Really, the Slaughterhouse case turned America into having 14th Amendment citizens that had civil rights as opposed to inalienable rights.
Yeah, our natural rights, forget those.
Yeah, there are no natural rights with a 14th Amendment citizen. They are due process rights, which are civil rights, which really, as long as we go by the due process that the government passes, then we're okay, as opposed to inalienable rights to the original class citizen. And of course, that's been a common theme here on 2A Radio about how it is that the government has essentially, through their different forms and their little sleight of hand, tried to create everybody within the United States to be a 14th Amendment citizen so that the country itself, the federal government itself, can control everything to do with our lives, and we no longer have inalienable rights. We have the rights that only they decide to bestow upon us, which then is no longer a right. It is a privilege. Civil rights, by definition, if you actually take civil rights, equals government-authorized privileges. That's what a civil right really is.
Whatever the government says, and some have argued that same thing with the UN Charter, United Nations Charter, for brands, you know, for the rights that it grants, you know, it just says, you know, goes on and says later on, insofar as provided by law. And that's the last thing I was going to ask you and make a point of. I've never seen anybody really write an explanation for why the amendments to the Constitution after the Civil War, I think it's the maybe the 14th through the 18th, at the bottom, the last little thing, it's like this authorization clause that says Congress shall have the power to make laws.
Yeah, they say Congress shall have power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article.
Yeah, not before nor since does any of the amendments have that on there. Now, why? I mean, are we dealing with a Congress that did not have that authority during that period of time because they were not considered the legitimate government of the United States?
Well, I'll tell you this. I have a copy of the Constitution right now. I see it in the 14th, 15th, 19th, and...
That's about it.
That's about it. Yeah,
yeah,
there you go.
Just in those amendments and none others.
Mike, thanks for the call. Right. We're going to move on from here. Have a great rest of your day. Everybody, stay tuned. There's plenty more to come. We're going to talk about some of the border wars down there with Mexico, what we're fighting with the illegals, trying to, I guess, push Mexico further north after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're listening in right here live to 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Well, there in history, there's really not been any account since the War of 1812 of a foreign invader invading onto American soil. Now, small exception during World War II, when the Japanese landed on two of the Aleutian Islands, way up north, way out to the side of Alaska. And we had to go onto one of the islands and kick the snot out of them. Another one of the islands, they were already gone because the Japanese were not ready for the winter on an Aleutian Island out in the Bering Strait in Alaska. So that was one small exception. But at the time, Alaska wasn't a state. It was a territory. bought for, what, $5 million, the entire state of Alaska, about one-third the size of the continental U.S., bought for $5 million from the Russians. Wow. I bet they are really licking their wounds on that one. Anyhow, what a steal for us. When it comes down to it, what we have now is foreign invaders invading through our southern border with the northern border of Mexico that are coming into this country, and what are they doing? Well, they're smuggling people, and they're smuggling drugs, and they're also committing a bunch of crime, murders, things such as that on our soil. We've even had several instances of the Mexican army coming across the border, shooting at Border Patrol agents, and then going back. Now, what's that all about? Well, I would imagine it has to go with the corruption we spoke about yesterday. However, what we have is we have thousands of people coming across that border on a regular basis. Now, some want to come by honestly and have a better way of life. The rest of them are making a whole lot of money on that and forcing these people oftentimes to be drug mules when they come across. Fine, you pay us money and you're muling drugs for us if you want to get across. Otherwise, we're going to kill you when you get there because you're going with one of our guides, or we're going to kill your family back here. But one way or another, you owe us, and that's the way it's going down. So what we had recently was the Tea Party actually had a rally on the Arizona's southern border with Mexico in Hereford, Arizona, where the activists supporting Arizona's SB 1070 anti-illegal immigration law were rallying along basically a remote stretch of the Arizona-Mexico border, which is about 70 miles west of Nogales. Nogales is directly south of Tucson, in support of the law that a judge put mostly on hold back in July. The United Border Coalition, which is an event organized by United We Stand for Americans and the Tea Party Caucus, as well as more than probably about a dozen or more other groups in the area, held the rally near a stretch of the border made of 15-foot steel posts set closely together to prevent people from crossing the border. Demonstrators attached hundreds of U.S. flags with messages about curbing illegal immigration to the posts and chanted USA after a handful of spectators gathered on the Mexico side of the border. One of the messages posted on the border wall read, "Mr. President, secure this border for America." Now, several people speaking to the crowd of more than 400 demanded that our Congress, both houses, and President Obama devoted more resources to increasing border security in remote areas like the site of Sunday's, I'm sorry, that particular demonstration, that was about three Sundays ago, south of Tucson. Now, if you really want to secure the border with Mexico, it's very simple. With all of the Border Patrol people that we've got, and you split them into essentially four shifts to be able to work the week, there's right around 160 hours a week, so it's easy enough to make it through four shifts. You also activate the National Guard, and you get all the people who work for Border Patrol, who are already assigned to the southern border, and National Guard out there, and you can literally post one human being every 100 yards. One human being as a sentry, an armed sentry every 100 yards. Now, I have said this many times in the past that I have personally witnessed when I've been in Arizona. I'll go down to southern Arizona, 40, 50, 60 miles, 80 miles north of the border. You have Border Patrol driving around looking for illegals. Doesn't work so good, guys. My analogy is, you know, the story about the boy who saw the leak coming through the dike and put his finger in there to stop the leak. That was the only way to stop it. At the source. He couldn't go downstream a few miles, collect up the water that was leaking, throw it back into the reservoir, then go back and collect more water and throw it back into the reservoir. That doesn't work. There's a problem at the source, at the dike. It needs to be repaired. Well, that's exactly the situation we have with the border with Mexico. One man for every 100 yards. One sentry for every 100 yards. That's pretty impressive. And that's with Border Patrol, National Guard. If you wanted to call more people down there and actually allow habeas corpus within about a half a mile of the border, suspend it within about a half a mile of the border, you could have one man for every 20 feet down there on the border securing it. And after a few months, while they're down there securing it, you've got contractors each building a segment of fence line to some specialized sort of construction, some specified construction format. And that might be a fence followed by a pit of alligators or razor wire or something of that nature, and then another fence with razor wire on top of both of those. And you have 100 different contractors building this, and if you have 100 contractors building it, every contractor would need to do about 29 miles. They all have their own sections to do. After several months, you start realizing, wow, we can't get into America. This is really difficult. The only points of entry are the legal points of entry. So sneaking across is no longer a viable option. Well, that's what would happen if the administration, the lawmakers, people in the White House, people in the administrative or regulatory branch, at Department of Justice, people at Department of Homeland Security, within the Border Patrol themselves, if they really wanted to secure our southern border with Mexico, that's exactly what would happen. They would actually secure it. So, short of that, we have someone calling in from Studio A on Line 1. Mark from Georgia, welcome to 2A Radio.
Ah, God bless you, sir. Let's see, regarding the 14th Amendment, obviously it's a fraud, and the problem is that the rank-and-file people, just as the rank-and-file people didn't understand, the South had a kind of a prenup in terms of signing into the Constitution. They said, look, we can leave if it doesn't work out, right? And that was the agreement. We had the right to leave. There was no rebellion. There was no insurrection. We just decided to exercise our right to leave. And the problem is that the people didn't understand that's all that happened because of the way that the newspaper empires misrepresented the issue. So the thing is that we're looking at a solution that involves legally recognizing that we need to go back to the organic Constitution, including the original 13th Amendment that was conveniently swept aside, that said you cannot have a foreign title of nobility like Esquire and be a member of a secret guild, the British Accreditation Registry, and they always call it the Bar Association because if they told us what it stood for, then people would go, well, wait a minute, why does the British Crown have any say in our legal system?
You know, that's interesting. I never questioned what the Bar Association stood for, and that's the British Accreditation Registry.
So the thing is that with the title of Esquire is a violation of the original 13th Amendment because basically they didn't want to have attorneys being involved in the lawmaking process that basically litigation could become a very lucrative, a livelihood. It's like, if people just do what's right, you don't need to sue, And so the thing is that we are looking at reinstating the Republic. It's now the republicoftheunitedstates.org. And if you have a problem where you're having mortgage foreclosures or IRS harassment, shoot an email to justice@republicoftheunitedstates.org.
Mark, do me a favor. Mark, hold on. Do me a favor. Send me your information because I'd like to have you on as an actual guest rather than just doing the plugs here and there. I'd like to have you on as an actual guest. So send me your information and email to bill@2aradio.com, and let's have you come on formally and do a couple of things because what you're saying is very interesting to me. I'm digging it.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I do invite people. I encourage people to be skeptical. I want to see this thing bear fruit, but what it needs to bear fruit is that people need to be disabused. I don't like the term re-education because it's a term like Red Dawn, and we put you in the re-education.
Yeah, absolutely. It has a brainwashing connotation to it.
Right, and disabusement is simply means coming to realize that a previously held belief is wrong. And I look at it this way, if I understand correctly, there's going to be an opt-out announcement made sometime in the not-too-distant future that people can choose to leave this de facto government and go with a lawful government. And when that happens, what I see happening is the first people that are going to leave are the people that either have the means of production, the factories and the farms and the resources, and the people who have the will to be self-sufficient.
Now, what you're talking about, Mark, hold on, Mark, welfare... Mark, hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, here. Have you ever read Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged?
Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged.
Have you read that book?
I have been meaning to.
Okay, you should, because essentially what you're doing is you're creating a Galt's Gulch. And you'll know that when you read the book, Galt's Gulch. As a matter of fact, if you like, I have an audio copy of that book I will send to you.
Ah, God bless you.
Yes.
That's Bill at 2A.
Bill at 2aradio.com, yes.
And I will, like I say, I encourage people to be skeptical because I want to see this thing bear fruit. And right now, certain things I'm taking on trust, and I know that there's been plot complications, but what it really comes down to is people need to wake up to the fact that the government has been presuming power only because people didn't know better. And when people wake up, basically, the way I look at it is the Satan has been in the business of deceiving mankind for at least 6,000-something years.
Yes.
And he knows what he's doing. Now, when we apply the God-given gift of reason, he only has as much power over us as we personally yield to him, individually and collectively. And when we use the God-given gift of reason to realize that if we stop buying into his lies, he no longer has power over us, so we retract that power and say the power is given to God to us, and you only have power because you deceived us, and we need mercy and grace to say, you know, when we're wrong, we need to own up to it. And where I was wrong is I trusted people that were completely unworthy of my trust and respect.
Yeah, and that's always a lousy thing to have to experience, especially when you experience it time and again.
Yes, and that's the thing is that as people awaken, the natural normal response is to be angry, and the thing I try to get across to people is violence that is morally constrained is acceptable. That if somebody can commit an act of violence, is getting ready to commit an act of violence against you, you have every right to defend yourself, even if this idiot happens to have a bright, shiny badge and he thinks he has authority. He doesn't. Now, I'm not saying use violence like the song I Shot the Sheriff because he was coming at me outside of his lawful authority, but... You know, we're trying to bring about a peaceful revolution, just like JFK said, a revolution is coming, and it'll be a peaceful one if we are wise. And that's what we want. We want to extend them forgiveness.
You don't seem to understand. JFK's revolution happened. We see it now with Obama in office. JFK's revolution had to do with, well, re-education in its pure form of brainwashing at the school level for 2 to 3 generations before they could get their socialist agenda back on track and actually have it as part of a new government, which is exactly what happened when Obama took office. JFK was right. What JFK said, he accomplished. What we're looking to do is reverse it.
I was under the impression that JFK was murdered because he was opposed to the plutocracy. And
I got to tell you, my thought is... follow the money, and I really believe that it had something to do with JFK wanted to do away with the Federal Reserve, go back to printing United States notes. I have seen some actual United States notes. They were in circulation for a while. I've seen a couple of different ones that were $5 notations. I believe follow the money. I think it probably had something to do with the Federal Reserve. Who knows? I doubt the Cubans or the Russians or the mob had anything to do with it.
Yeah, well, obviously, the Federal Reserve, if it were the only fiat bank, would be very limited in its ability to do damage because basically they'd print up money, it'd become worthless. It's the fact that the American branch of this plutocratic system, which is what it really is the Federal Reserve system. And there's a Federal Reserve Bank throughout the world, and I've heard a report, and I'd like to get this authenticated, is that There were 7 nations that did not have a Rothschild-controlled private central bank. It's now down to 5. Iran, Syria, North Korea, Cuba, and Libya.
You got about
now,
10 seconds to finish up.
They say at face value, but Iraq and Afghanistan, according to this report, were on that list. Guess what happened when we went in and took over and carried out regime change? They are now off that list. They got scratched off the list. Now, I grant you, again, that needs to be authenticated because there's what I hear and there's what I believe, and I haven't been able to authenticate that that's the truth.
Mark, thanks thanks a bunch for the information. We're headed into the break.
We'll be in touch, okay?
All right, I appreciate the call. Everybody, stay tuned. There is plenty more to come. You can tell we don't talk just about Second Amendment stuff on 2A Radio. We've got another caller from Texas, I believe, in the next segment. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
Hey guys, welcome back. We're going to get back into a little Second Amendment related things. And this has to do with early legislative acts that have happened in this country. We're going to get to that really quick. So in 1623, obviously well before we were an established nation, Virginia law that prevented a citizen from traveling unless he was, quote, well armed. The statutes at large, volume 1, page 127. In 1631, Virginia required, quote, that men go not to work without their arms. All men that are fitting to bear arms shall bring their pieces to church and upon pain of every offense pay 2 pounds of tobacco. So, if you didn't actually take your guns with you, you were fined 2 pounds of tobacco. In 1658, Virginia required every household to have a functioning firearm within the house, and in 1673, the law provided that a citizen who claimed that he was too poor to purchase a firearm would have one purchased for him by the government, which would then require him to pay a reasonable price when able to do so. So, they'd give it to you, and then you'd pay back. How about 1676, a law that declared that, quote, liberty is granted to all persons to carry their arms wheresoever they go. Again, Virginia statutes. Let's see, section 1823, volume 2, page 386. All of these I have references for. In 1639, the Newport colony required, quote, none shall come to any public meeting without his weapon. That was in Rhode Island. How about 1650, Connecticut ordered that its citizens, quote, be always provided with and have in readiness by them a half pound of powder, 2 pounds of serviceable bullets or shot, and 2 fathom to match to every matchlock upon the penalty of 5 shillings a month for each person's default herein. You know what a fathom is? A fathom is 6 feet. So 12 feet worth of powder. You had basically powder kegs that were 2 feet high. You had to have 6 of those, minimum. Now, that's awesome. In 1770, quote, for the better security of the inhabitants to require every resident to carry firearms to places of public worship. That was statutes of the Colonial Revolution. A military, I'm sorry, a militia are in fact the people themselves and are for the most part employed at home in their private concerns. Part of the Declaration of Independence writing papers alongside with some of the Federalist papers. Just wanted to give you a historical perspective when it came to gun rights here in the United States.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2WayRadio.com.